When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I thought that I'd be ostracized from Hollywood for being rude and that it wasn't very smart. But there was that awful moment of silence, and then the audience burst into laughter. And so it was fine. They kind of liked the fact that I teased him a bit, and he himself had the grace to laugh that night too.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Awardist. I am Entertainment Weekly Executive Editor Jared Hall, and normally here on this podcast, we are breaking down the state of the 2022 Emmys race, but we have a special episode for you today celebrating the one and only Julie Andrews, and joining me to do so is EW senior writer Maureen Lee Linker. Hey, Maureen, how are you?
Hi, Jared. I'm great. I am practically perfect in every way.
I love that. That's one of my favorite things you've said. But we are celebrating Julie because she was recently celebrated by AFI at a special tribute, which is airing on TNT. That would be tonight, Thursday night, if you were listening to this podcast on Thursday. Maureen, in addition to being at this AFI tribute, which we'll get to, I want to first tell everyone you spoke with Julie Andrews on the phone for something like 30 minutes. So that interview is coming up in just a bit. Don't go anywhere. You don't want to miss that. But let's get back to that tribute. Maureen, tell us the highlights of the event. Give us the inside scoop.
Well, I will start at the very beginning because that's a very good place to start. But it's a fitting reference because the evening kicked off with a really special moment, which was that the surviving actors who portrayed the seven Von Trapp children in The Sound of Music kicked off the proceedings. They came out and they spoke about their memories filming on location in Austria with Julie Andrews. And then they proceeded to lead the entire Dolby Theater in a sing-along of Do Re Mi, walking through the crowd, coming to surround Julie Andrews sitting on the dais in the ceremony. Mm. And Julie even joined in. And if you're a Julie Andrews fan, you probably know she doesn't really sing anymore in public. So I thought that was just so lovely to see her feel free and happy and just enjoying this moment, singing along with a whole audience full of people, including these now grown-up kids who she created this incredible film with. And then the night just went ahead from there, celebrating her resume and the incredible movies she made with guests that included many of her collaborators, like Steve Carell on the Despicable Me films and Bo Derek from 10. And it was a really special night celebrating a very special lady.
Yeah. And she is also very good friends with Carol Burnett. Did I see that Carol was sitting next to her for this tribute?
Yes, it was so sweet. So typically, the AFI, the American Film Institute, they do this yearly. Mm-hmm. They choose someone to receive their AFI Life Achievement Award. They've been doing it since 1973 when the director John Ford was their first recipient. They've missed a couple years, like most of us, because of the pandemic. Julie Andrews was originally supposed to receive this in 2020, but they typically ask the honoree, like, who are the most important people in your life that you'd like to sit beside you? And generally that's their family and then maybe some of their close friends in the business or collaborators. And so Carol was sitting right next to Julie. She got up in the middle of the show and gave a lovely speech paying tribute to the many television specials they did together and their long friendship. Yeah. And then also she was the one at the end of the night to come out and formally present Julie Andrews with the award. And it was just really special to see that lifelong friendship and how these two women still lean on each other after all this time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to lie. I feel like Julie Andrews could have and should have received this many years ago. I don't know why. Well, 2020, but then 2022 took so long. But I mean, her body of work, her legacy on pop culture, on film, on, you know, musicals is just, she established that so long ago.
I completely agree. And, you know, it's interesting because sometimes their choices are people who are a bit older and could have been the pick for many years. I mean, they've done Mel Brooks and John Williams in recent years. You know, they're both in their 90s. But they've also done George Clooney and Denzel Washington in recent years, who, knock on wood, have many more years of great work ahead of them, in addition to the incredible body of work they've already established. But I agree with you. I have a sort of sentimental reason for wishing she had got this earlier, which is that so many of her co-stars are gone. And a big part of what makes the night special is seeing all those people come out and celebrate this person. And it was very sad, actually, that a lot of people just couldn't be there anymore because they're not with us anymore. I mean, even if you think about the fact that this had happened in 2020, Christopher Plummer probably would have been there. And of course, he's passed away since. So that would be the number one reason, even beyond just she obviously has deserved it for many years, that I wish it had happened a little earlier.
Yeah, as you were talking about that, he's certainly the one I was thinking of. Dick Van Dyke, was he there?
He is older by quite a lot, and I think still being very cautious with the pandemic, because he's in his 90s. And so he taped a special video message remembering their time together on Mary Poppins and congratulating her, which was wonderful to see him looking so well and sharing a moment with all of us.
Well, yes, I'm sure he was not going to miss an opportunity to help celebrate her, because obviously that movie is just one of the most beloved of all times. Speaking of beloved, what is your number one Julie Andrews film or role?
I have to go with probably the most obvious choice, which is The Sound of Music. I mean, I just have such special memories of it growing up. Whenever I used to visit my aunt and uncle, that would be the movie we would watch. But usually I would go to bed after the puppet show because then it got too scary after that. And I was raised Catholic, and I would often play nun as a child solely to play the nun who ran away from the convent to be with the man she loved.
I love that.
I had a skirt with like an elastic waistband that I would put on my head and make into a habit.
If the habit,
I was
great.
A strange child.
Or imaginative. I mean, that's very creative of you.
Sure. So. I loved singing all of the songs, of course. And then I was very lucky about 9 years ago, my aunt and uncle, who were the ones who really introduced me to this film and made me fall in love with it, we actually got to travel to Salzburg together and take pictures in all of the places where they filmed. Yeah. My uncle and I raced through the gardens just like they do in Do Re Mi. So I just, I both love the film and think it's a perfect film and can never not watch it if I'm flipping channels and it's on. But it has so many like special life memories for me as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love that. Is there a Julie Andrews movie that you think is underrated that perhaps, you know, fewer people have watched that they should check out from her filmography?
Yeah. Well, there's one that actually I haven't seen, but I know a lot of people really love, and that's The Americanization of Emily with James Garner, which was her first dramatic non-musical role after doing Mary Poppins and The Sound of Music. And that's definitely on my list of titles to get to sooner than later. But I would also say probably Victor Victoria.
Okay, that's the one I was thinking too.
Yeah, because it certainly comes up when you talk about her, but generally after like Mary Poppins, Sound of Music, and The Princess Diaries. And it is a tour de force performance by her. I mean, she is playing a woman, pretending to be a man, pretending to be a woman. Her husband, Blake Edwards, directed it. It's another film she did with James Garner and a musical. She also did a Broadway production of it in the 90s. And it's just so clever and funny and fun. Mm-hmm. And her performance is great. And I think it's very ahead of its time in how it deals with gender and gender fluidity and sexuality. And so I highly recommend that one.
Yeah, very much so. Okay, so that interview that I teased a bit earlier, tell me, well, don't tell me all about it because we're going to hear all about it, but I'm just kind of more curious your kind of general overall takeaway after speaking with this legend.
I mean, I have to say it was one of the most magical experiences of my life. Like, Sammy, our wonderful audio producer, and I were in the radio room in the office while we were on the phone. And the whole time we were just like open mouthed, gasping at each other inaudibly so the tape wouldn't pick it up, and like reaching for each other and being like, oh my God. It truly felt like talking to royalty or talking to Mary Poppins. Like, she is everything you could wish her to be and more. She's charming. She's a little bit cheeky. She's gracious. I mean, it just was a singular experience. I played a little of the tape for my mom when I got home that night. She cried. It's you know, anybody that can have the experience of interviewing Julie Andrews, highly recommend. Good for one's health.
Sounds like it. All right. Well, we are going to get to experience all of that right after this quick break. Don't go away, anyone. The Awardist, this special edition with Julie Andrews, will be right back. Welcome back to The Awardist. We are continuing this special edition, this special, special episode with the one and only Julie Andrews. Maureen, give us a little bit of a setup here. Set the stage.
Well, you know, I will say that it was hard to prepare for this, not only because Julie Andrews means so much to me personally, but she's in her 80s. She's done many interviews. Yeah. What can you ask an icon that they haven't already been asked? And so I did really try to find some new channels of conversation or ask her things that might surprise her or take her off guard. And I hope and think I was a little bit successful in that. And so consequently, you won't hear probably some of the stories you're expecting. If you want the Sound of Music helicopter story, you're going to have to go somewhere else.
We know that one. Yeah.
But hopefully it'll just give you a little bit more insight into who she is, the choices she was making throughout her career, how she felt at some of those key moments. We got into one of my favorite of her moments, which is when she very cheekily thanked Jack Warner when she won her Golden Globe for Mary Poppins. Loved hearing her take on that.
Yeah.
So hopefully a slightly different taste of Julie Andrews than you might be accustomed to.
Oh, well, you have my interest piqued. So let's get to it. Let's roll the tape. Here we go, Maureen with Julie Andrews.
You are receiving the AFI Life Achievement Award this year. And so
yes.
The most important question is, do you have room for this amidst all the other wonderful accolades you've received?
What a sweet thing to say. I certainly do. It's not the trophy. It's the wonderful accolade from one's peers, I think, that really, really matters. And that is a thrill for me. I never, ever thought about it. And when they asked if I would accept it, it was like, oh, gosh, I love watching these shows. And it never occurred to me that I might be one of the happy recipients of such a thing.
Going back into your career, the list of leading men you have starred opposite is quite
stacked. Isn't it great?
You've got James Garner, Paul Newman, Rock Hudson, Christopher Plummer, and so many more.
Yeah, Jack Lemmon and Max von Sydow, and I could go on and on and on.
So of all of those wonderful guys, which one of them did you have the most instant chemistry with, and who was more of a journey of discovery for you?
Oh, gosh. Well, luckily and happily, I really got on with them all very, very well. And I loved them all for different reasons. They were mostly hugely generous and shared the experience and were not, didn't sort of grab the limelight or anything like that. I mean, obviously, Jimmy Garner was a great friend because we worked three times together. Jack Lemmon was an adorable guy that I loved working with. And who would not be thrilled working with Paul Newman or any of the others, and Rock was adorable. I really loved each of them and remember them so fondly for the film that we made and the experiences that we had and their great friendship, which always lasted. You might not see them again for a while, but the friendship was always there.
Yeah. I have to ask, were Paul Newman's eyes as blue in person as they are on screen?
Yes, they are. They are. He was a darling guy. So sad that so many of them now are no longer with us.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and that makes me sad, very. Yeah.
Well, I have to ask about my favorite scene in The Sound of Music, which is when Maria and the captain dance the Lendler on the terrace.
Oh, I'm glad you love that. I loved it, too. It's beautifully shot, isn't it? And very moving in a way.
Yeah. So what are your memories of filming that? Because you and Chris Plummer really crafted something very romantic without actually ever kissing or anything like that in the moment.
Well, you have to thank Robert Wise, the director, for that and the way he chose to shoot it and when he pushed into close-up and so on. But it was a sweet scene. And there's one beautiful shot that I've always been fond of, which is when he pulled the camera back and we swept past the camera as a twosome in that dance. And it was just a lovely moment of film that I remember very well.
Yeah. And do you have a moment in your screen career that you consider the most romantic, whether it's that or something else?
Oh, gosh. Each one, every romantic scene in a way has its memory for some reason or other, whether it's that your partner is out of focus because you're too close together or something like that. I had a lot of romance with Jimmy Garner in both the films that we did together, or the three things that we did together. But honestly, it depends what you're filming, what it's about, and it is romantic ultimately, but it's also a part of a craft that you're doing to make it work, if you get my point. Mm. And so you are aware that, you know, much as it may be romantic, there's a camera right there beside you and an awful lot of people standing around. So I think there isn't one in particular, but I could say honestly and truthfully, they were all pretty delicious one way and another. I do remember getting up off the bed after doing a love scene with Jimmy Garner, and we spent most of the afternoon shooting it. And it was very early in my career. It was in the Americanization of Emily. And I thought, oh, I must be sure to handle this properly. I'm sure everybody does. And I was fine, except when I got up, my legs buckled underneath me because it had really gotten through to me in some way, because it was deliciously sweet. Oh. And probably that as much as anything.
Oh, I love that.
I thought I was being so casual and professional, if you get my point.
Yeah, until you tried to stand up.
Then I tried to stand up and my legs just gave out.
I think laying in a bed with James Garner, you can be forgiven for that reaction.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I was terribly young and naive.
Well, a little while after that, you worked with Alfred Hitchcock, and he has a bit of a reputation for not being the most friendly with actors. Did you find that was true? I mean,
I was aware of it, but I never felt it from him personally. He was very generous to me. And in fact, one day when he was talking to his cameraman about lenses, and I said, Hitch, I don't know very much about lenses, I'm ashamed to say. And he said, you don't? You should. You're a lady, and when you get into close-up, you should know what lens is on you. Come with me. And he sat me down and gave me about a half an hour lesson on lenses and what they do and why they work. And I have to say, I wish I had absorbed it better, but I was deeply thrilled that he spent that time on me, giving me an education.
Yeah, that's
and
remarkable.
It was helpful, and it was very generous of him.
Going back to the awards side of things, we know that everyone loves to think of award shows as very glamorous affairs, which of course they are, but
there's a lot of people behind the scenes doing a lot of work. Believe me, I'm sure there are.
Yeah. So with all of that and the various shows you've attended, is there a hilarious moment or a mishap, something that happened backstage that's burned into your brain or even on stage?
Oh, hundreds of things. I mean, on stage, so many, many things. pieces of scenery crashing onto the floor or dropping from the flies or something that wasn't rigged correctly or falling onto the stage during flying scenes in Mary Poppins or any of those things. I mean, there are a lot, and they were all, let me put it this way, good learning experiences, believe me.
Well, one of my favorite award show moments of yours is, of course, when you thanked Jack Warner when you won your Golden Globe.
Oh, gosh, that took a lot of courage, believe me. I wasn't sure whether to do it. And then I thought, well, I mean it, because if it hadn't been for being passed up on My Fair Lady, I would never have gotten to do Mary Poppins. And look where that led me. So it was quite genuine, as well as being a very slight dig.
Yeah, well, what were you thinking in that moment? I mean, did you plan it ahead of time?
I thought that I'd be ostracized from Hollywood for being rude and that it wasn't very smart. But there was that awful moment of silence, and then the audience burst into laughter. And so it was fine. They kind of liked the fact that I teased him a bit, and he himself had the grace to laugh that night, too.
So if you had to do it over again, would you do it again?
I think I would have more courage now than I did then. Yes.
Well, besides playing Eliza Doolittle on screen, is there a role that got away, whether it was because of scheduling or something else?
Quite a few that passed by, but I don't regret that. I can't tell you any one, and it's probably not very smart of me anyway to mention any one, because whoever did pick up the role would have done it. It did do it beautifully, but I can't really remember. But there were a few that I passed on or wasn't able to do because I was shooting too long or something like that. There was an interesting moment when I would have met my husband, Blake Edwards, a lot sooner. I was asked while I was doing The Sound of Music whether I would be available for The Great Race, which Blake was directing. I'd never met him, admired him enormously, but I wonder what would have happened if I had been able to do it. Would we have been in love that much sooner? We were married 42 years, and he was my true chum and mate. But I couldn't accept that because I was running too long on The Sound of Music and had to finish that. And then they were moving straight away, so it wasn't possible.
So you were asked to do the Natalie Wood role?
Probably.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I mean, she was so lovely in it anyway. And who knows what it would have done. I don't know. But that was a nice thought. Would we have met earlier? You know, what would have happened? But it wasn't a regret in any way.
Yeah. Well, with Eliza Doolittle, is there a part of you that still wishes you'd been able to capture what you did there on screen?
I think there was a time for a while where I wished I had put down the role definitively somewhere, because I did play it for so very, very, very long. I was in the show on Broadway and in London for like almost three and a half years. And that's 8 performances a week.
Yeah.
And it's very disciplined, hard work. Just to keep going, as you can imagine. There was a time when I wished I had done it for a television show or something like that, but there really wasn't, and so I don't regret it anymore. I don't hold it as a grudge or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I did want originally to show that I did it, but it's in the great scheme of things, everything worked out just fine.
Yeah, I'd say so. From your on-screen career, is there one scene that you would like back to get another crack at that you've...
Many, many. And I honestly wouldn't remember them all, but there are many. And you always think, why didn't I do that? If you happen to see something in later years and you catch it on Turner Classics or something like that. There's so many things that you wish you could have done better or taken a different attitude toward or, you know, but... Yeah, that's always true, I think, for everybody.
Yeah. Is there a project you wish had gotten more attention, or are you proud that Mary Poppins and The Sound of Music loom so large in your legacy?
Very proud of them, yes. They're beautifully crafted, well-made films with tremendous detail and care. And what a great learning experience it was for me. You can imagine that was my first film, Poppins, and I knew nothing about the craft and how kind people were and embracing. It is what it is. The art form of film has changed and changes and is forever a circle. I mean, it goes round and round and round, and one year something is all the rage, and then another year. I mean, I remember distinctly people saying, well, they'll never make another boxing movie ever again because there's just nothing else to do. And then Rocky came along and was huge, and that changed everything. And then so many times, you know, as one put out a big film, the art form was changing towards smaller movies, more independent films. It goes through eras, it seems, but they always return to something that the public hopefully enjoys.
Yeah.
And so musicals are still doing well, and dramas and comedies and all of them. But there was a time when everybody thought that was finished with because they were too expensive or too, you know, indulgent, but not anymore.
Well, I know that a big part of the AFI Award is specifically honoring your work in film, but you also have done quite a lot of television, particularly some specials with Carol Burnett. So how did that friendship between the two of you start, and what has that meant in your life?
Oh, she's a dear friend, and she's godmother to my daughter, and we've been friends ever since we first met. It was as if when we first met, we were introduced by some gentlemen that thought that we would enjoy each other, and it's usually the kiss of death when somebody says that. But the moment we met, we never stopped talking, and we just bonded instantly. It was as if we discovered that we both lived on the same block and played in the same areas, and she's American and I'm English, but it didn't matter. And it's just a wonderful friendship of total understanding and acceptance between us both. I treasure it. I do.
Well, Victor Victoria is another standout of your projects. And I think in some ways it almost feels more relevant today because we speak about gender and sexuality so
we
different
do, much
now.
More. I think that was a forerunner too. You know, that was before we really began to open things up. But I'm thrilled if it's still helping to open those doors. It's not enough, but it was a beginning in those days. Yeah.
Well, as you mentioned, you began your career with Mary Poppins, and that just shot you off into the stratosphere. And
well, that film career, yeah, but before
yes,
that,
of course,
it was thank heavens a lot of years on Broadway, and then even before that, a lot of vaudeville in England and touring and learning my craft, really.
But in many ways, sort of a similar thing as what happened to you with Poppins happened to Anne Hathaway with The Princess Diaries. So
it did indeed, and worthily so. I mean, I recognize instantly how talented she is, and she's just a natural on screen.
Her being put in that position, were you or have you remained a mentor to her since you had some common ground?
Well, I don't know about a mentor, but we have remained friends. And when we meet, it's like old home week, really. I mean, we are very good friends, and I don't see her as much as I'd like. I don't see Carol as much as I'd like. Mm. But friends in this best of all possible art forms are always kept, and it's like yesterday when you get together again, you know?
Yeah. I know people have talked about it for so long, and of course Gary's gone, but would you do a third Princess Diaries if it came along ever?
I think if he asked me for the joy of working with him, yes, but not now. I mean, I think we're all much too old and probably not, it wouldn't be appropriate, but if he had asked, I probably would have.
Yeah.
Because he was a darling guy.
Yeah. It's been well cataloged, the impact of the throat surgery you had in the 1990s. But for a new generation, you have become quite a different voice. You're Gru's mother, you're Queen Lillian, and now Lady Whistledown. Has that been intentional on your part, finding a way to still make a mark with your voice in a different sense?
No, it was pure chance. I mean, I never thought about it. And then certain offers came along, and I was available, and it felt interesting. And it is a wholly different technique to do a voiceover, and a fascinating one. And it allows a lot of freedom, a lot of crying, a lot of throwing, let's say, mud at the wall and seeing what sticks and so on. And it's a very interesting art form in a way. I never thought about it, but when they were offered and I was available, it was, thank you, I'd love to do it.
Has it felt particularly resonant or meaningful to be able to still use your voice in a different way?
Yes, very much so. You can imagine. And it's been a learning, growing learning experience, because every character that one does, it's something different. And that is fascinating, to find your way to it and through it and see what kind. I mean, Gru's mum is really a terrible character. She's an awful mother and one of the worst characters I think I've ever played. But it's such fun to play that awful lady.
What is the worst thing you have been asked to say as Lady Whistledown? Because she's also pretty awful.
No, I don't think she says very much that's bad. She's gossip, and she's, you know, it's what people make of her in a way. They're frightened that she might say something. But actually, if you look at it, I don't think she's ever said anything, unless I'm wrong and I've forgotten, downright mean. She might be a little caustic or bitchy once in a while, but I think she's mostly gossip to do with the town, the Tom, as they say in that series. It's all about society and who's with whom and so on. So it's quite recognizable in a way, even though it is set so long ago.
Yeah. Have you been able to meet Nicola Coughlan, who plays Penelope?
No. I've heard in sort of absentia, I've heard things from her or about her, but no, I would love to meet her one day. But you know, when I record, it's just voiceover, yeah. And I'm tucked away somewhere, and I never get to meet the real company. And it's a lot of trial and error, and they come back to me and say, "Could you just add a couple of lines here, or we're going to delete that? Will you say it a different way?" There's a lot of extra pickups that are done, but I've never actually met any of them, and I'm a little annoyed at all that.
When you're doing your voice work, do you ever ad-lib, or is that not your style?
No, they ask you to.
Yeah.
It's actually quite freeing in a way, because particularly with Gru's mom, I mean, she sings a bit, she stomps a bit, she's appalling. But it's kind of fun to see what comes out of her. If they don't want to use it, they don't. Believe me, there's a lot more on tape than they ever use. So God knows what somebody has heard me say. I'm not sure who's keeping it, but I hope they've been kind about putting it away in a bank vault or something.
Well, there is a link between The Sound of Music and one of your more recent projects, Julie's Green Room, in that you interact with puppets in both.
Right. With the wonderful puppets on The Sound of Music, it was so great. But Green Room was a lovely project to do, and I enjoyed it immensely. Very hard work, actually. But just, you know, working with those brilliant puppeteers who are so talented. I mean, they're hidden below the stage level, and you know, all you truly believe in the characters when you're working with them.
Yeah. When you were doing Sound of Music, did you have to learn puppetry yourself?
No. I did have to learn how to hold the puppets, because, as you remember, we were up in that gallery and manipulating them, so we did have to learn that. And you know, I've watched a lot of puppetry and been to certain places where they make them or have a puppet theater, for instance, in Salzburg, I believe they have a wonderful puppet theater. But I've never actually, you know, other than learning how to manipulate them, I've really not had much else to do with them. But they're very different. Some are on strings, some are hand manipulated and whatever. But these wonderful Sesame Street actors who do these voices and manipulate the puppets, they're wonderful. And to watch them go up to a child on the stage when you're recording it, and the child will be kind of shy, and all of a sudden they'll take one of the creatures with them and talk in that voice, and the child opens up and is friendly and able to say what it feels, and it's really lovely to watch.
Yeah. Well, I think in large part because of Maria and Mary Poppins, your on-screen persona is this sort of maternal proper figure. And of course, you've pushed back against that with things like Star and Gru's mother. And your colleagues always describe you as a cheekier version of than some of these characters. So did you have to really fight or work harder?
I think that here's a good description that I do sometimes mention, which is that if you think about Clark Gable, what's the movie you think about? You think about Gone with the Wind. Mm-hmm. And it is because it was the most successful and promoted that image of him and so on. It's true that, you know, the most successful movies are the ones that people remember the most. And so I don't think they're part of me, and I'm thrilled to have been a part of them. But it's not who I am in total. I hope that I'm not as squeaky clean as some of them, and I hope I'm more raunchy than in others. But truthfully, it's all about which film has been the most successful, who remembers you for what. That's really where it stands.
Yeah, but in the process of getting roles that maybe diverged from that, how hard was that to get people to cast you in those?
Well, I did do quite a number of films, but again, think about it, they weren't as ridiculously successful as some of the others. Like, I did do The Americanization of Emily, I did Duet for One, I did Hawaii, I did That's Life with Jack Lemmon, and they're all different characters, very different, but just weren't as huge, or weren't a musical, for instance. So it sort of boils down to what is the image that remains, and it's usually from the way that people remember you or want to remember you.
Yeah. Did you have to really fight for the ones that were, like, extremely different?
No, not necessarily. No. I think I was very aware from Poppins onwards that I had to be careful not to be cast too often in a nanny role, because a lot of people in those days, I think, thought, oh, she'd be good because she played the nanny in Sound of Music or, you know, Poppins. But I think it's just good fortune in one way. Scripts don't float across one's desk and under one's nose every day of the week. And to be asked to do what one has been asked to do and what one chooses to accept, it depends so much about with whom one is working, what the story is about, how you feel about it yourself. And I did always try to diversify, but they weren't as successful as the really big ones. That's, again, going back to that.
Well, you have not been on Broadway in quite a while, and you have now started directing theatrical productions.
Right. So, which I enjoy immensely.
Yes.
And that's a whole new challenge, believe me. I didn't know if I could, and I found that I loved it.
So would you want to go back to Broadway, whether you're directing or acting in a play or anything
like that?
Who
knows? Maybe one day, and there are certain things that there's a little musical that was developed from one of my children's books, which is really what I'm doing mostly these days. I'm mostly writing with my daughter, and we have quite a big collection of books now. We've written probably 35, 36 books. We've got three coming out fairly shortly, children's books, one this fall and two next year, and also my third memoir. But that's really at the moment where I'm focusing a lot of my attention, which is what I love to do. And I'm home and with my family and enjoy it very much. But I do love the idea of directing. And one of our books was made into a little musical, which does show promise. Let me put it that way.
Hmm. Have you heard Bridgerton, the musical?
No, I haven't. Have you?
Yes, it's very good. And then there's some Lady Whistledown songs as well.
Where did you hear about it?
It's just been on Spotify. It was not it's just an album. It hasn't been performed live.
Well, I'm dashed. I really didn't know anything about it. Good. I mean, anything's possible.
Who would you say is your unlikeliest fan, someone that's approached you that really, really surprised you, whether it was a head of state, a rock star, anyone?
There was a time when I was at one of the premieres of The Sound of Music, and suddenly I saw Bette Davis coming across the floor to me, and she came to greet me, and she said something like, "You, my dear, are going to be a very big star." And that was the most unlikely and wonderful accolade, because I was a great fan of hers, and I couldn't believe that she would be that generous and lovely. And that was certainly a wonderful experience.
Yeah, that's remarkable. How incredible.
Isn't it lovely?
Yeah. Well, you have lived such an incredible life. You've starred in countless films. You've performed stage and television. You've written so many books, directed for the stage. You're a mother and grandmother. Is there something that you're still really keen to try that you've never done before?
I'd love to do more directing. I would, because it's a pleasure and it's giving back a little bit. Mm. Some of the things that I've learned, and if I can pass on anything to a new generation, that would be very rewarding for me. I think I just, there's just so many things that I'd love to do. I'd like to learn more languages. I'd like to learn, you know, more about, anything you care to mention. I read a lot, but it's never enough, and I never have enough time for all of it.
Yeah. Well, I was really lucky to see your My Fair Lady in Sydney.
Did you? I'm so pleased you did. It was a lovely production, wasn't it?
It was so beautiful.
That was the biggest thing I've ever directed. And talk about obligation. I had to at least do honor to the original Moss Hart and Alan J. Lerner and Frederick Lowe. And it was daunting, but I had the most wonderful people behind me, willing me on, helping me on, doing, providing anything I needed. And really, it was a fabulous company. Oh. I was awfully proud of it.
Well, you should be. It was really a wonderful production.
I'm so pleased that you saw it. And wasn't she good?
Oh,
Anna,
she was incredible.
Eliza Doolittle.
Yes, she was amazing.
Yes, she was. Is.
I'm sure you hear this from everyone, but you truly were the voice of my childhood, and it's a dream come true to get to speak with you. So thank you so much for your time.
Oh, that's so lovely of you. Thank you very much. All I can say is, how lucky can a girl get in on my part, because it's been so amazing and such a huge experience, everything. And I'm a little staggered by my good fortune. I really am.
Yes, you've really become such a essential thread in the tapestry of so many people's lives.
So I hope it's a good thread, and I hope it doesn't offend in any way, because it's been wonderful for me. It really has.
Well, I think it's been equally wonderful for all of us. Thank you so much, Julie, for your time.
You're very, very welcome.
And congratulations again on receiving the award.
Thank you so much. Lovely talking to you, my dear.
You too.
Maureen, I can sense and just feel the joy and love that you had for her during that interview, knowing that even before the interview even happened, what we were talking about there. So I'm thrilled that happened. So glad the AFI honored her and we were, given the chance to speak with her. But I got to know, what were your big whoa moments during that interview? The things you will like never forget.
A couple. I mean, I'll never forget her coyly telling me that Paul Newman's eyes were as blue in person as they
okay.
appear on
Clearly
screen.
Something she won't forget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really loved getting to hear her speak about using her voice in a different way in this later stage of her career, and having lost her singing voice, sadly, due to that botched operation. Getting to hear her talk about getting this sort of second lease on using that instrument in the various animated roles and narration she's been doing these last 10 to 20 years. I just thought that was really cool and introspective. And then also, actually, to be honest, my favorite moment, I think Sammy's favorite moment too, was we were talking about the Bridgerton musical, you know, which won the Grammy Award.
Oh, yeah.
And we asked her if she'd heard any of that. And She didn't know what it was. And so we explained it to her. Right. And her response was, well, I'm dashed. And if that is not the most Julie Andrews response, I just don't know.
Oh, I love that so much. And I might start using that myself.
yeah, that's the one I will, that will live rent-free in my brain for the rest of time.
Oh, gosh. Well, look, this has been a great pleasure. Just talking about her with you, but also hearing from her. Julie Andrews, I think, is one of those people you could easily do like a marathon of movies and roles, and you would just have the greatest time sitting in front of the TV. We could make like an entire weekend out of it, a film festival of sorts. And now that I'm saying that, maybe we will. No, I don't know. But yeah, I highly encourage everyone, if you have not really dug into her filmography, to do so, because there's so much more there beyond. Of course, the popular roles are popular and famous for a reason, but she really is a truly incredibly talented actress and singer. And there's a lot of great work out there to check out. So, Maureen, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Oh, my absolute pleasure, Jared. Thanks for having me. And thanks for enabling me to have this truly magical once-in-a-lifetime experience. It really is a life highlight.
Well, I could not think of anyone else I would want to speak with her. It was a great interview, so thank you. And folks, that is it for this episode of The Awardist. If you liked what you heard, follow, rate the podcast, and leave us an award-winning review on Apple Podcasts. And to keep the conversation going with us about everything going on this Emmy season, you can follow Entertainment Weekly on all socials, at EW, on Twitter, at Entertainment Weekly, everywhere else. And you can also tag me at Jared Hall. So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, goodbye. See you next week. This episode of the Awardist podcast is hosted by Jared Hall, produced by Chanel Johnson and Sammy Junio, edited by Sammy Junio. Full episode transcripts are available at EW.com. Thanks for listening.